I can tell you from personal experience that leading a community of any size is no easy task, even a community the size of our congregation. And I honestly cannot imagine what it would be like to be someone like, well, say, Tom Henry, who is mayor of the city of Fort Wayne, and he governs over 266,000 people, give or take a few thousand. Or what it would be like to be our state governor, Eric Holcomb, who governs 6.7 million, or what it would be like to be the U.S. president, currently Donald Trump. And whether you like him or not, I know he's a pretty divisive figure today. He governs 327 million people in the United States of America. We're talking about rulers today because we're talking today about who Jesus is. Our message series right now is What Child Is This? We're following up Christmas back in December, and now that this baby has been born and come into the world, now we are discovering who he is. And today we see that Jesus is our good king. He's not just any king. He's not just any leader. You know, we have worldly rulers who we like, and Jesus, I can tell you, is better than them. We have worldly rulers whom we don't like, too, and I can tell you Jesus is definitely better than them. Sometimes, you know, we might say that a particular governor, a mayor, or leader may not be the person we want, but he's the one we need. Well, today I can tell you that Jesus is not only the leader we need, he's also the one we want. And when we hear a little bit about Jesus' kingdom and what that is like, the kingdom of heaven come down to earth, we read about that a little bit in Psalm 72, our reading for today. When we hear about that, we'll see that Jesus really is the ruler we want. We'll get deeper into that reading in just a few moments. But for now, I want to point out something. I want to point out that, just how it describes a truly good king. This ruler in Psalm 72 is first of all, righteous. He's doing good. He's pursuing justice. That ruler in Psalm 72 brings prosperity to the land. That ruler can defend the people as well and bring peace. That ruler in Psalm 72 is gracious and caring towards those who are weak, those who are afflicted, those who are needy. And the people, indeed, are precious to him. And what a great thought that is to say that I am precious to the one who leads my community. When we're speaking of humans, we know that no human leader could ever really match up to that description in Psalm 72. No human leader can provide all these things. And whether we're speaking of a really good leader or a bad leader doesn't matter. Whether we're talking about a leader you like or one that you don't, it really doesn't matter. No human leader can ever live up to this standard that we see in Psalm 72. And by the way, I want to say this when we get started today. Whenever I talk about government, I always want to go out of my way to say, you know, I'm not being political. I'm not talking about any particular politician or party, not saying they're good or bad. What I'm doing is I'm echoing this biblical teaching that I believe it's expressed really clearly in Psalm 176 that says, do not put your trust in princes and human beings who cannot save, because of course only God can save us. But blessed are those whose help is the God of Jacob, whose hope is in the Lord their God. And that's where our hope needs to be. And today we're learning about how Jesus is that king in whom we can trust. You know, I looked up some of the great political speeches in American history. If you read these or if you go listen to them, you realize that our American presidents actually know some of these things we're talking about. They know their own limitations, actually. They know that they cannot provide everything that people are hoping that they will provide. You know, a good example, George Washington, our first president, he decided to retire from public life after his first term as president. And when he did, he gave a farewell address to announce that fact. And in that address, it's interesting, Washington spends very, very little time talking about himself. He doesn't talk about accomplishments or say, hey, good for you guys, way to go in these first years of our nation's independence. Instead, he spends almost the entire address telling his readers, it was a newspaper address, he tells his readers what they need to do now in order to keep the American experiment going strong. One statement that really summarizes the tone of the whole address is this one, and he says, and they had very eloquent language in George Washington's day, it is of infinite moment, he says, or that means importance, it's of infinite moment that you should properly estimate the immense value of your national union. So think about how valuable this nation is and the fact that we can gather together as one nation And then he says, here's what to do in order to safeguard this new nation. Here's what to do in order to provide prosperity that you want. Abraham Lincoln then, who was president of the United States during the American Civil War, a very, very difficult time in our nation's history, he gave his second inaugural address shortly after, well, as he started his second term in office. And he said this as the war was ending, basically, about a month, if I remember right. It was a very short speech, Lincoln says. Now, here's what you need to do in order to recover from this terrible war, which has affected us so much. He says, we need to do some work. Lincoln says it this way to end his speech. He says, with malice toward none, with charity to all, with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we're in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations. And he's telling us what to do now in order to really secure peace as a nation. Another one, FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He was our president when America was drawn into World War II by the attack on Pearl Harbor, the bombing of Pearl Harbor by the Japanese military. And the very next day in his address to the nation, Roosevelt said, I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. And he's telling us what to do to achieve safety for ourselves. I could bring up lots of other examples. But what's really clear from each of these speeches is these presidents knew that they needed help. They knew that they needed help not only from God, but from the American people too. In each of these speeches, our presidents were telling us what we need to do in order to have peace, in order to have prosperity, in order to have a just and good nation. These presidents were telling us that, you know what, they really couldn't promise us anything. They couldn't really promise us anything because they knew their limits. And so these human leaders in these times, they shared their hopes for the nation. They shared direction for the people, but they couldn't make promises. In contrast, is Psalm 72 that we read today. Psalm 72 is a prayer for the king. And you know, this psalm, it was most likely written by King David. Some commentators believe it was written by his son Solomon. But either way, we can read this psalm as an expression of dependence upon God. And it's interesting, if you think about it, it's a prayer for good leadership by one who himself was bearing that burden of leading. And this psalm, it starts, it specifically asks God to bless the king himself. Endow the king with your justice, O God, the royal son with your righteousness. And we continue, we see prayers for the king to judge well. We see prayers for the land to be prosperous under his rule. We see prayers that the king would defend those who are oppressed. We see prayers for the king's long life and prayers that the king would protect his nation militarily. And, you know, by the way, I can say all these prayers are good things to pray for a king or any other human leader. We could, and we really probably should, be praying all of these prayers for our people like our city mayor, our state governor, our president. We should be praying these things for our state and our national representatives and senators, for judges, and for all those who exercise authority in the world. But as we keep reading, we get to a point where we realize the psalmist isn't talking about a human king anymore. We realize the psalmist can't be talking about a human king when he starts to describe this king and what he will do. And we realize that no human king could actually accomplish these things. Down in verse 12, for he will deliver the needy who cry out, the afflicted who have no one to help. He will take pity on the weak and the needy and save the needy from death. He will rescue them from oppression and violence, for precious is their blood in his sight. And if that wasn't enough, down in verse 17, we see, may his name endure forever. May it continue as long as the sun. Then all nations will be blessed through him, and they will call him blessed. So the king we're reading about isn't really King David. It isn't King Solomon or the human kings of Israel that would follow these guys. This king is God's chosen one. This king is God's Messiah, the perfect leader whom God had promised would come to save his people. And for the psalmist, we've got to understand, for Old Testament Israel, the idea of getting a really good king, the idea of one day being ruled by a king whom God himself would send to be the good ruler for the nation, that was really good news for the people of Israel, to know that that was coming. Because by this point in their history, Israel had had their share of human rulers. And it was honestly, it was a mixed bag. All the way back in Egypt, Israel had suffered under the unjust king Pharaoh, as they were slaves for 400 years. After Pharaoh, God's people had followed Moses, who led them to wander in the desert for 40 years, and himself made errors and sins. They also followed Moses' brother, Aaron. Aaron, of course, who led the people of Israel into great idolatry at the very foot of the mountain where God's presence was as he made the golden calf for them to worship instead of the true Lord. And then after Moses and Aaron, there came Joshua, who led God's people into the promised land, conquered that land, but he failed to finish the job had given him. They were then ruled by the judges, people like Gideon and Deborah and Samson and others, all of whom had their own failings. The first real king of Israel was Saul, and he was a good leader, but he was consumed by jealousy and anger. King David had an affair with Bathsheba. Solomon's pride got the better of him, and Israel had had many leaders by this point. Some were good, some were bad, but none of them were perfect. None of them were truly good in the way that Jesus is good. None of them were the kind of person about whom you could say, through him all nations will be blessed. Israel was looking and waiting and hoping that God's king would come and rule over God's kingdom on earth. And the knowledge that he really would arrive one day, that was good news for the people of Israel. It's good news for us too, because today we know that Jesus is the king that the psalmist is looking forward to. We know that Jesus is truly righteous and truly good. We know that Jesus is truly just and fair. We know that Jesus delivers the needy by saving us from death, in fact. We know that Jesus rescues us from the oppressor when he defeated Satan. When Jesus arrived, he actually turned our ideas of kingship and kingdoms upside down. Jesus came and preached the good news of the kingdom of heaven, which in the end, it wasn't an earthly nation like Israel. It's a spiritual nation that extends through the whole world and welcomes all people. Jesus the king, he came not to lord his power and his authority over us like human kings really can't help but doing, but Jesus came to serve humbly and even to suffer for you and for me. Jesus' throne is the cross, that place where he entered into his kingdom. And now sitting at the right hand of God the Father in heaven. There on the cross, Jesus died and then he rose again. And through that act, he made each of us citizens in the kingdom of heaven. He has forgiven your sins there. He has reconciled you to God. He has saved you from death and the devil and has made you new. That's our king. The king that Israel had long hoped for has arrived, and he turned out to be much, much better, more wonderful than they had ever imagined. Through him, we can say all nations are blessed, and they will call him blessed. And we too, the fact that we have a king, Jesus, and the fact that we are citizens of the kingdom of heaven, you know, that's good news for you and me. We need a good king just as much as ancient Israel did, because the truth is that our human leaders can't help but fail us. Our human leaders can't help but fail us, whether they're good or bad leaders, whether you like them or not, whether they're your party or another party or no party at all, they're still human. They can't make promises. At least they can't make promises like Jesus can. And so for me, I can say, you know, I'm going to put my real trust in King Jesus. Even as I pray for our human leaders, like those I mentioned earlier, Tom Henry, Eric Holcomb, Donald Trump, and all the other local and state and national leaders that I couldn't even name right now because there's so many of them I know working for us and our nation and for us as people, congressmen and women, judges and councils and more. I'm going to put my real trust in King Jesus even as I do my best now to support our city, our state, and our nation. I'll do my best to be a good citizen, caring for my neighbors and community. And for you, I would encourage you to do the same. Pray for those who govern us. That's probably the most important thing we can do. Pray for those who govern us. And you can even, you could take this bulletin home today and let Psalm 72, or you know, go make a bookmark in your Bible. You could let Psalm 72 guide your prayers for our leaders in this city, country, state. And be good citizens. Be good neighbors in your life. do all those things that we do to support our community, things like voting, volunteering, things like caring for the people around us. You know, when we act in love towards someone, regardless of their political label or political leanings, I believe that's actually a powerful witness today. When we care for someone, you can say across the aisle, as the political folks say, in this world today when so many people are willing to reject or avoid those who don't share their political convictions or convictions around the different issues facing our nation. We can be good citizens of this nation even as our trust is in something greater. We can follow our King Jesus even as we work to support the human leaders whom God has placed over us. We can be people who defend the needy and oppressed and people who promote justice and righteousness in our community. We can seek prosperity and well-being for our neighbors. We can work to make our city and nation truly good, not because this is all we have, but because we are trusting our King Jesus to return one day and finally make it all new. Amen. Let's stand.